There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along for another couple hours of live local talk. And we'll do it on this getaway Thursday for a lot of folks with the Memorial Day extended weekend ahead. We'll be here, but a lot of people be out tomorrow. Reminder, wherever you are. You can take the FM Talk 106.5 app with you and right there on your phone and listen to FM Talk 106.5 wherever you go, or catch up on podcasts or shows you missed, or any kind of information you want to see from our social media feeds. They're all in one place, the FM Talk 106.5 app that's free and waiting for you. If you're an Apple user, over at the App Store. If you're an Android user, go to Google Play and download it today. Just look for FM TALK 106.5. No point between the 6 and 5, just FM Talk 106.5. And you'll see our logo. That's the app. Download it and enjoy. Also, coming up on today's show, maybe we'll get Dr. Bill on next week to talk about it. He mentioned some this morning when Dalton and I were talking to him about the start next week of the 2023 hurricane season. You know, so NOAA came out. And we'll talk about NOAA in the second hour, too, as Director of Marine Resources Scott Bannon and Dr. Sean Powers join me to talk about snapper regulations, NOAA over that as well at a federal level. But NOAA, yeah, has announced their hurricane season predictions. I think they should do this. Actually, I'm going to ask this of my friend who's going to come on with us in a second here. I think they should do it more like some kind of football thing, some kind of hype thing where they come out. Instead of just releasing the thing, NOAA should have like a big press conference and roll out the names with like big, I don't know, confetti going off or something like that for the hurricane season. But hype it up. I mean, John, what do you think? If we hyped it up like a, you know, even like a college football recruiting or something like that, it would be, you know, I think, you know, you say, and our first hurricane for this year is Arlene. Whoop, crowd goes wild. What do you think?
Sean, bless your heart, buddy. I can't jump on board on this one, because the first time you do that, one of them will be a Cat 5 or a strong Cat 4, and then we're all sitting there going, that was a bad idea, and it'll be replayed over every cable television news station for the next eternity. So,
John, why you gotta bring
it? Sorry to throw a little shade there, buddy, but I...
It's just a marketing idea.
That's a fun idea, sure, but... sometimes those marketing ideas are best left on the shelves.
Yeah, that's right, Bud Light. All right, so lot to talk about today, and this is like, it's... You start the story off at AL.com by quoting AAA saying Memorial Day weekend's expected to be one of the busiest in years. Of course, I got a running joke, except for the pandemic. AAA always says every year is like, this is going to be more Americans traveling than ever before, and fill in the holiday. You know, it's almost like a Mad Lib. You just fill in the holiday and say that. But yeah, this is going to be busy for sure. And gosh, we got a patch of great weather ahead of us. So there's a lot of people heading to the beaches.
Yeah, good point, Sean. It does seem like every year AAA is sending out that, and it's a good reminder, I think, for people. You know, it wouldn't feel like Memorial Day weekend or 4th of July weekend or Labor Day weekend without a AAA alert or Thanksgiving Day holiday either. So, you know, God bless AAA. So, we're expect everybody's got packed their patience, because, you know, we deal with this every year. And those of us who live around here know kind of when to venture out, at least we think we do, when to venture out on certain roadways, the I-10 in particular, the Bayway, the Causeway. So, we're going to be inundated, and it all starts this weekend, Memorial Day weekend. It's a big weekend for the economy in Baldwin County. in particular, and away we go. My understanding is that the anticipation for the summer season is going to be a little less as far as occupancy goes with hotel and lodging and that sort of thing down in the beach. But it's, you know, we'll wait and see how it all pans out as the summer goes on. I think the outlook right now is for it to scale back a little bit from previous years, which have all been record-breaking steadily each year, pretty much since the BP oil spill and 2010-2011 season. So we've had just an incredible run here. But, even if we see a softening, it doesn't mean the roads are going to be, empty.
Yeah,
I think people need to just anticipate and pack their patience.
Yeah, I would say by this afternoon, we'll begin the eastbound I-10 Bayway glut. And, we won't see the end of that until probably late Saturday or Sunday. And then the turnaround flow going west, pick up Sunday into Monday. And you look at this and you talk about the different routes, right? So this is good. This is why I want you all to check this out as well at AL.com. These are 7 coastal Alabama road project areas to watch. So if you're heading to the beach and you're packing patience or whatever you're doing, what are we going to kind of give us a layout? Where do we got to watch for?
Well, I think people could be, again, I-10 is going to be crowded. You're probably at the Walls Tunnel going to be sitting there for a while. But there is going to be some road work going on I-10 starting June 4th. So it won't be going on this weekend, but there will be some resurfacing work going on. But that work's not going to be going on during the daytime hours or afternoon rush. It'll be going on at night. So ALDOT has coordinated these projects to be occurring overnight. And so that will, in theory, should not be an issue with regards to road construction occurring at the same time as some of this rush hour traffic. But one place to keep in mind and keep an eye out on is in Orange Beach. I think they're still doing some work down there on State Route 131. They got they call it the U-about. It's a roundabout by docks, and they're constructing that through that whole area there, or along Canal Road. There's going to be a drop down in speed limits, so people need to be mindful of that, because I know that's a highly trafficked area. As you get past the wharf, it's a very highly trafficked area for people that are heading towards the beach. So that's one area to keep an eye on. And another one is Route 59. So what I understand is that some of the construction is not going to be going on this weekend, but we can anticipate some activity going on in the month of June. So it'll be going on this summer. The city of Gulf Shores is looking to add an extra southbound lane on 59, and it's an extensive project, but it's not going to, from my understanding from the city, is they're not going to have any lane closures this summer. So in theory, again, there shouldn't be any real major obstacles when we're talking about road construction. So on the surface, things don't look to be so imposing when it comes to the orange barrels on some of our major routes to get to the beaches. But, we'll see how that plays out in practice. And again, even though that there is no construction going on simultaneously as some of the high traffic periods are occurring for people that are heading to the beaches, that doesn't mean there is going to be a cakewalk to get down to the public beach in Gulf Shores or their condo in Orange Beach. You're going to have to pack a little bit of patience and kind of time your trips, too. And also of interest, the Beach Express, that's out there. That's a potential. And if people are not engaging in toll avoidance, which we've talked about, and possibly could segue into another issue here, where people aren't talking about toll avoidance at the Foley Beach Express bridge, they can probably get down to Orange Beach much quicker than if they were taking Route 59.
Yeah, unless they were shunpikers, right? That's that term we learned during the Mobile I-10 River Bridge debate, shunpiking, where you avoid avoid the tolls. Let's talk about this, as we're talking about traffic in South Baldwin here, and a pretty darn big story we had talked about last week. You had Judge Poole in Montgomery coming back with a stay or an injunction against the any proceeding on with the bridge project down there, and it was a page turner, man. It was like I had not seen a judge speak like that in an opinion, I don't think ever. What do we know at this point? I mean, is it on fast track for the Supreme Court? What's happening?
I don't think it's on fast track, because if it was, there would have been some Supreme Court ruling as far as an emergency stay goes down at that, with regards to the ongoing construction of the Gulf Shores Bridge. you know, it's kind of status quo, and so that leads me to believe that it could be a while before the Supreme Court takes action on this dispute. And basically what we got going on here is that the construction of the new bridge in Gulf Shores that will connect from Canal Road ultimately up to the Foley Beach Express is on hold right now. A judge in Montgomery County ruled basically, he ordered what I think was a preliminary injunction to stop construction on that project. And that's kind of where we're at. There was supposed to be a news conference yesterday. That got postponed. The Gulf Shores Mayor Robert Kraft had originally scheduled this news conference to talk about some public safety concerns by not proceeding or moving forward with this bridge. But, then, again, that press conference was held off. So we're kind of on a wait and see. This thing is wrapped up in the court system. It is on appeal. And the judge is ruling in Montgomery County. That was, again, very sharp and critical of LDOT Director John Cooper pursuing this bridge project in Gulf Shores and claims that he was trying to bankrupt the toll bridge company in Orange Beach. And that company had the Baldwin Bridge Company had also offered an alternative project in lieu of the Gulf Shores project. So there's a lot of history there that, you've talked about a lot on your show, and we've written about a lot as well. And it gets complicated, and there's a lot of moving parts, but where we're at right now is kind of a little bit of a standstill. We're waiting on the Alabama Supreme Court. Interesting of note, the Supreme Court ruled quickly on an emergency stay when it came to that executive privilege, keeping public records out of this particular court proceeding. That was back in January. They ruled that it was okay. The text messages and emails from Director Cooper and the governor's chief of staffs and vice versa did not have to be put out in the...
Are they going to take another bite at that apple, though? Is there another way on the... I mean, is that now said and done? Because wasn't it specific to this case, or does it set precedent that the executive branch and those communications are classified, for lack of a better word, or privileged?
Yeah, at the time, the Supreme Court's ruling was specific to this case, but they could come back and ultimately rule on this executive privilege thing that could have a wide-ranging impact throughout the state. I think there's some concerns, and I know that, like, the Alabama Press Association has gotten involved as well. There's some concerns that, you could have a trickle-down effect where an executive branch, and we could be talking about a mayor of a small town, doesn't have to release, any kind of public records. It could have some wide-ranging tentacles there, and it's up to the Supreme Court. We don't know when yet they'll rule or how they'll rule on that.
And that's something that's, we're talking about here in Alabama, but it's not specific to Alabama. Other states have dealt with this, right, and are questioning this. What power does their state-level executive branch have?
Yeah, I know this has been an issue in Florida where Governor Ron DeSantis and now presidential candidate DeSantis had raised this issue as well, and whether or not executive privilege should be granted to the governors. It's a privilege that's for years has been granted to presidents, and now we have executive branches throughout the country and the states are pushing this envelope as well. So, it'll be interesting to see where Alabama falls in line with all this. But certainly it's an issue that is now being raised in this state by Governor Kay Ivey's administration.
You can always read more John's work over at AL.com, or if they want to find you directly, how do they do that?
I'm on Twitter, at JohnSharp99.
Always a pleasure, man, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, Sean.
All right, there he goes, John Sharp, and we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile. Get your text at the Ascension Technologies text line, 343-0106. Phone call to those same digits, 343-0106. Coming right back. This is Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:25, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you all along. Hey, say hello to my friend, David McCreary, LCM Motor Cars, and let's talk about inventory, and let's talk about some hours over the holiday weekend as well. Hey, David.
Hey, good afternoon, Sean. Yeah, we're going to close Saturday and Monday. We haven't ever done that. We're going to let the guys have a long weekend. This year started off pretty good, so we're just going to take a little break. But going back to what we talked about yesterday, Tuesday, we bought, I think, 16 or 17 vehicles. They're all on the ground. Everything got there today. We'll get pictures and whatnot of them. But we got some really nice cars, some really affordable stuff, and we've got some really nice late model, low mileage stuff. So anything that you're looking for, give us a call, because you don't know what we have until we get it on that website. We got a bunch of new stuff.
Yeah, let's talk about how people can come out in person and check out these vehicles. Also do it online.
You can come out and see us at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. The website's got all the information on it, just not pictures of everything yet. So if you call us, we can text you all that stuff. You go to lcmmotorcars.com or give us a call, 251-375-0068.
Thanks, David.
Talk to you tomorrow. Have a good day.
All right. Talk to you then. David McCreary checking in from LCM Motor Cars. Jerry's in Fort Morgan's text here. Very glad that the judge stopped this stupid bridge, and I'm also happy to see the judge was intelligent enough to keep the bridge company on site to protect the environment around the site. Yeah, that's the thing we discussed yesterday, right, with Erica Thomas from 1819 News, that while that bridge is the injunction's there to stop any new construction, they still have people on site, I guess, to maintain that job site. So if you see people there, that's part of it. They're just not supposed to be building anything new. And speaking of the bridge project, too, if you didn't catch it yesterday, it was interesting. This came up, and it was Erica's story that came out yesterday afternoon about commentary from Tim James on who should be held responsible on this bridge project. Now, you have to understand that Tim James has did have a dog in this hunt, right? She writes here, former gubernatorial candidate Tim James has a unique perspective on building a new bridge over the Intercoastal Waterway in Baldwin County. He and his partners started the Baldwin County Bridge Company in the early 1990s. They built the Beach Express, and current owners of that bridge are in a legal battle with Alabama Department of Transportation Director John Cooper. Okay, so that's kind of the background on it. And then, so I guess Erica's talking to Tim James to get his perspective on what's going on with this injunction and all that. He said, I have been bothered by what seemingly has been going on. When the judge ruled in that case with his negative explicit language, I have never seen a judge articulate something as strongly and as negative as he did in a situation like this. He goes on to say, James says, what you're looking at here is the most egregious case of abuse of power I have ever seen in the state of Alabama, and I have been around for a long time. End quote. Wow. It says here, Tim James said, normally John Cooper would be protected by the state by acting as a director of ALDOT. However, Cooper testified that he had not contacted the governor about the project for 6 years. So Tim James goes on to say, alarmingly, Director Cooper testified that he had never spoken with the governor about his new bridge project. He then backtracked, claiming that he mentioned his new bridge project to her once in 2017 when she first took office. He has not spoken a single word to the governor about the Cooper Bridge in 6 years, end quote. So then he comes back here further down in the story, and it says, Erica writes, because of this, James believes the fault lies on Cooper, not the taxpayers. James's group sold the company back in 2006. He said he had no stake in what's going on with BCBC and ALDOT. However, he understands the process of doing a job for the state. He says every contractor in Alabama knows that it takes that risk. That work could be canceled, but it hardly ever happens. But this is the case. This case is different because Cooper went ahead and authorized the notice to proceed on the Scott Bridge Company, knowing that they had this conflict hanging out there. He goes on to say, you've got bad faith here. And if you look at the definition of bad faith, it's potential fraud. And this guy has already cost the citizens a lot of money because of what the court ruled. He sure as hell should not be protected from claims by third parties, including Scott Bridge Company. So he's talking about, and he goes down further in the story. And I'll pop this up on the Twitter feed as well, at FM Talk 1065. But he details in here, he believes that John Cooper acted outside of his job as ALDOT director. Therefore, he should be personally liable for losses in this, not the state of Alabama. It's interesting. We'll talk about that as well going forward. Plus, Justin Bogey joins us here in just a few. And hour number two, always a treat to get Dr. Sean Powers in studio and director of Alabama Marine Resources, Colonel Scott Bannon. They're joining me at a little after 1 o'clock. So that's all heading your way right here on Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. News is next.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Just looking at one of the monitors here. The White House saying that the debt default is off the table. I don't know what's happened in the negotiation today. We'll dig into that and get you an update coming up later on in this very program. All right, our phone number and text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. As always on Thursdays, good to talk to Justin Bogey, fiscal and budget reporter for 1819 News, who's been enjoying a riveting session of the legislature all morning, right?
That's right. You know, they're working on the budget today in both chambers, so lots going on. You know, lots of talk about this Montgomery Water Park again and the lack of funding for it, which is just, you know, amazing to me. But yeah, lots going on this morning.
Okay, so yeah, let's go to that before we even get into the meat of what you wrote most recently at 1819news.com. So that water park. So that water park was in there. So was this Mobile money funding for the Mobile Airport move. That's not in there. Water park's not in there. But a World Games bailout still in there?
Yeah, you know, actually the airport, it's not getting the original amount of money that it was asking for, but there's about $5 million in there for the Mobile Airport.
Okay, so that changed.
And,
good.
Yeah, it changed yesterday. And then the Port Authority has $20 million back in, or the State Port Authority. So Mobile's getting a little bit of money, and all these Montgomery lawmakers are very upset that Montgomery's not included in that. But yeah, you're right. The World Games bailout has snuck back in. It's moved from the Education Trust Fund to the General Fund, which I guess makes a little bit more sense. Still, you know, would question if that's a good use of taxpayer money, but it's got $5 million in there for that. And, you know, so some of these other things have snuck back in.
Okay, so they're moving their way in with, what, seven, how many legislative days? Five or six, right? Left?
Today is the 24th. It's 24th or 20th. I think they have about 5 days left after today.
So does that, I mean, when does the concrete start to set up? I mean, if these things are in there, do you feel that then that's going to ride or that's going to come back out? Kind of what's the temperature?
Yeah, you know, I think at this point, it's pretty likely that those will make it in there. Certainly the airport and the Port Authority, the World Games. It's still got to go through a conference committee no matter what happens today. You know, that's the most likely outcome is it'll be in conference next week or the week after if they take next week off. But it's looking like those things will make it in there. Also interesting, I don't know if you saw or not, but the tax rebate has gone back up. You know, the Senate had cut it down to $250 million or so. It's back up to $575 million, so a couple hundred bucks a person, basically. And again, I think that's probably a sign that bigger tax relief is not coming since they're putting more money into a rebate, and things are certainly moving slowly on those.
Yeah, I want to dig into those tax relief questions we talked about last week, but in that bigger question, from your sense, not just pragmatically, not idealistically, can we get both the tax refund at whatever the 210 amount or the 420 for a couple, can we get that and relief on sales tax on groceries, or is it going to be one or the other when they're finished?
You know, the intention seemed to be that they wanted to do both, and there's certainly still time to get the grocery tax through, but it's really running out. You know, I thought it would probably be on the House floor today, and it's not on the two calendars that they have put out there. So, you know, if something doesn't move on it in the next couple of legislative days, it's going to be very hard. Yeah, I don't understand why they wouldn't do that since so many people are behind it. You know, you had all but six legislators co-sponsored the bills to do that. So it certainly seems like it was a big priority. You know, the speaker has said that it's a priority for him. The lieutenant governor has said it's a priority. But we're still not seeing it make it to either house, the House or Senate floor for a vote, which is concerning at this late date. But, you know, my hope is that that'll still go through, that both of those things are possible. But the clock is certainly ticking on it.
How big of a factor, can you tell how big of a factor AEA lobbying is on preventing movement on the grocery tax repeal?
Yeah, you know, I listened to the public hearing on it on Wednesday and, of course, yesterday, and of course, you know, they were front and center being opposed to the bill, saying, you know, they're not opposed to relieving the grocery tax, but they're opposed to doing it without replacing revenue to the Education Trust Fund, which, you know, as we've said many times, has a $2.8 billion surplus that has more money coming into it than ever. So if you, you know, I don't think that argument holds water. But, of course, you know, regardless of whether they're supposed to or not, a lot of these lawmakers take money from the AEA. So that has to be one of the factors holding this up. And I think, you know, discussions are obviously still ongoing. So hopefully we can get to some kind of solution on that without increasing attacks elsewhere.
Okay. So so there's the part of this is the things not talked about as much here as we are towards the very end of session. And you write about that. You said after Tuesday, only 6 work days remain before the session adjourns, meaning many bills, potentially bills that could provide much needed economic relief to Alabama families, will die. So you look through the ones that most likely will be forgotten, right? Oh, time ran out kind of thing.
Yeah, and there's several of those, and I think, you know, first and foremost in my mind is probably the overtime tax bill from Representative Daniels. It passed the House unanimously. I can't remember if everyone co-sponsored it, but it had a tremendous amount of co-sponsors. The Speaker was a co-sponsor on that bill, and it moved over to the Senate a month ago, and it's just sat waiting. And then you have several of these tax rate kind of tinkering with those bills, getting rid of the 2% tax rate, cutting the top rate to 4.95%. They all passed the House, you know, several weeks ago, and they're just sitting, waiting for the Senate to take them up. And what's interesting about those bills, in particular the income tax bills, Senator Orr, who's chairman of the Senate Education Budget Committee, he sponsored the same bills on the Senate side, and yet it would be up to his committee to move those, and they're not moving. So, you know, my indication is that we're, you know, as you sort of alluded to, we're in this posture of it's going to be rebates and or the grocery tax and really nothing else at this point, which is, you know, certainly disheartening. And you know, to be clear, those bills weren't going to, you know, lower your tax rate by your tax bill by thousands and thousands of dollars. They weren't doing this bold relief that we've been advocating for, but they were certainly better than nothing. And they could have helped, you know, people fairly substantially over a period of years.
I've been talking to Justin Bogie, fiscal and budget reporter for 1819 News. Okay, you take this on because in your latest piece, because this will be the pushback, right? If you want all these tax cuts, but you don't understand times are going to get tough, and it's we don't have the money to risk that, right? We can't do all these things because, well, you end up in proration or whatever it is. But you argue in here that there is money for that. I mean, you kind of alluded to it a second ago, but your point is that there is money to do this. There is enough of a buffer.
Yeah, there's money to do it so long as you stop the record growth of government that we've seen over the last 5 years or so. You know, as I said, we had a $3 billion or so combined surplus this year. We're on track for about a $2.5 billion combined surplus next year. And if you're budgeting responsibly, if you're not increasing spending by 10%+ every year, you can certainly provide tax cuts and still be okay over the long term. But again, you know, as I was listening today, the argument was these budgets don't spend enough money. We need to add back money for things like the Montgomery Water Park project and things like that. So you really can't have it both ways. You can't say that we're, you know, hard times are ahead, these revenues aren't going to continue, but then be advocating to spend more money at the same time. It just, you know, it makes your argument lose credit, I think, when you're saying that on one side and then advocating for more spending on the other side.
So, like some of those tax cutting proposals you had last week, those are gone for sure too. In this, like the tax credit for buying a safe or a gun safety equipment, or those things, the elimination of state and local sales tax on that, is that one gone?
Well, you know, I think that one it's passed the House, and so it still technically has a chance in the Senate. You know, I think something would have to happen by like day 29 technically to get that one through. But you look at a bill like that, and it's really not, you're not talking about a lot of money. You're talking about a little bit over $1 million, I believe. And that's something that could actually, you know, increase the safety of Alabamians, and particularly children, which seems like everyone would get behind. But again, it's just kind of sitting there. So it doesn't make a lot of sense, especially on these kind of, you know, low budget impact, but larger, you know, behavioral or societal impact, however you want to look at it, items like that.
Yeah, it seems like some of them, I mean, and I'll harken back to the big one, of course, the reduction in state sales tax on groceries. I mean, just looking at it, like, politically, who doesn't want to be behind that in the state of Alabama? Somebody who has to go get elected again, who doesn't want to be pushing that? I mean, that gets you votes all over the place.
Yeah, and that's what's so puzzling about the lack of progress, because everyone, you know, appears to be behind it. Of course, we still haven't heard from the governor on it, and I guess she could be behind the scenes, you know, slowing it down, but I haven't heard that indication. But when literally, you know, almost every member of the Alabama legislature is behind it, and 83% of Alabamians are in favor of it, it just seems like a no-brainer. So the fact that that still hasn't really progressed to the point that we'd like to see it is just, it's shocking, because it makes so much sense politically, and it's going to help a whole lot of people immediately. And I was looking at the other day, assuming the full 2% repeal went into place, you know, for a typical family of four, and that's just assuming they're kind of on a moderate grocery budget, they'd save about $600 a year. You know, that's larger than the rebate that we're talking about. That would be a one-time deal that's out the window. So it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yes, once again, maybe they think there's not the political capital, and here comes the rebate check back, and there's this sugar high or whatever, and versus something that is not as acute, that's more chronic, that week after week, month after month, you take more of your money home and come home with the same groceries. You know, maybe it's not as politically safe. I don't know. I think I'd have to be for.
My question for you would be, you know, 4 years from now, or when we're heading into the 2026 elections, how many people are going to remember that they got a $200 rebate check in 2023, as opposed to, you know, they're saving $50 or $100 or whatever a month on groceries? Yep. You know, I think that's going to have much longer impact. No one's going to remember a rebate check in 4 years.
I completely agree with you, Justin. I completely agree. That's why maybe if y'all watch what happens and doesn't happen in Montgomery, even though you would think that things would be supported, maybe that's a little cautionary tale or a lesson in how Goat Hill works. All right, Justin, tell folks if they haven't heard of 1819 News before, what do y'all do? What's your story?
Sure. You know, our aim is to provide news coverage without a bias. We have a team of reporters across the state, really keeping people up to date on anything important that's happening. And, you know, I, of course, write a couple of economic and budget-related columns a week, and it's a great place to go get your news.
Justin, as always, man, I appreciate it, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, there he goes. Justin Boakye, 1819 News, 1819news.com. 1246, a heads up, you know, get an extended weekend in front of, for a lot of people who have the somber holiday on Monday off. Maybe use, like, you know, tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, to figure out the stuff in your house that needs to go away. You know, I've said this before, a pro tip here, it's easier to organize fewer things. And if you have junk in your way, I got the guy who can help you with that. That's my man Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They're online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or their name is the number. Just call them 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You got junk at your house. You got it at a shop. You got a storage unit. You got it outside the house. I mean, the number of big things that the crew from 1-800-GOT-JUNK tackles each week would surprise you. It's not just boxes of stuff in the attic or a junk at a garage. I mean, they'll move the contents of a storage building in the backyard. Yard and the whole storage unit, above ground pool, full swing set, you know, with the redwood and the Pirates lookout, the whole, they can get that too. You've got a storage unit you pay on every month, and you're like, why are we doing this? And it's because you don't want to get down there and sort through it and get rid of all the junk. They can do it for you. Could be a house you're getting ready to sell. Anywhere you got junk, you need it gone. You need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So make the appointment and maybe make it for next week. Identify the junk this weekend. Make the appointment for next week. Online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or you can pick up the phone and call them at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They'll show up on a day that you agree to, like an appointment, a time that you agree to, like an appointment. They show up and you just point at the junk you want gone. They'll quote your price right there on the spot and get to work and get it done if you say yes. So check them out. 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Set that appointment for, as soon as you can. All right, 1248. Coming back, this is hard hitting here. There's been a lot of discussion about AL.com, and maybe they know the state and what will get clicks here. I bet they do. The story that, I guess, first came up 2 days ago, Ben Flanagan's Bama Rush documentary, 16 Things We Learned About Alabama Sororities. I'm going to score myself as I go through this as a graduate of the University of Alabama and may have spent time around girls that were in sororities. We're going to score through this coming in just minutes. All right, news is coming your way next.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, looks like I was off by a day, says David on the Ascension Technologies text line. Said, Sean, you were wrong. The eastbound backup of the tunnel and the westbound backup of the tunnel have both already started. I thought it would be this afternoon, before that happened. But there you go. So the traffic starts for the extended Memorial Day weekend ahead. Hey, this segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And, well, I said that earlier, but I want to tell you this, too. That Trey, see if Trey texts me. Let's see. So Trey, who will most likely be out snapper fishing this weekend, can still, because somebody was asking, could he still take, yes, you can still make your appointment with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett will be probably snapper fishing like half of us come tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, but you can still make your appointment with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So I'm going to speak for him ahead of time. You can still make the appointment, still get that done. So do not let that get in your way. Speaking of snapper fishing, we'll be talking about that. Coming up next hour, Dr. Sean Powers and Colonel Scott Bannon in studio for the hour. And your questions will be welcome at 343-0106. All right, let's see. Fred said, surely the tax rebate is not 420. It is 420. Yes, 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 yes. Laugh it up. Yes, it is for, because they messed with the number. Remember, it was going to be 400 and 800. Then it went to, 110 or something. Then it went to 220. And of course, 220 for an individual. No, 210 for an individual, 420 for a couple. So, yeah, there you go. All right. This this story that has, I guess, some people in the state talking here. It is a documentary about Rush, Rorty Rush at the University of Alabama. Ben Flanagan writes, Bama Rush, a new documentary chronicling sorority recruitment at the University of Alabama, is now streaming on Max. Oh, yeah, that's a new HBO name. They're just Max now. Not HBO Max. They're Max. I don't know if I'd have walked away from the HBO branding. But now they're Max. Says, despite complaints from the University of Alabama and threats from sorority chapters, director Rachel Fleet and her documentary crew gained access to four women in the months leading up to Tuscaloosa's annual Rush Week as hashtag Bama Rush went viral on social media for the second year in a row in 2022. The crew embedded itself in Greek culture in and around the campus. And it goes through and says, and talks about the documentary some and how they put this through. But the list here, the list factor, is 16 things that you learn from this documentary. Now, Ben writes here, he said, warning, this list contains spoilers for the film. So if you had your extended weekend all planned around watching this documentary about sororities at the University of Alabama, you may want to just lower the volume a little bit. I wouldn't want to spoil this for you, like the end of Game of Thrones or something like that. But he does warn you that these are spoilers for the film. I think we can risk it here. I'll run through a few of these. It says, Alabama is the Greek life standard. Okay, so they talk about how the University of Alabama and the Greek system is like the brand that all other universities look at. It says, next year for some sororities give identity or branding. Oh, come on, it always did. If I knew... Muse were coming somewhere, I kind of knew generally, with some exceptions, what they would look like. I knew if KDs were coming or Tridels were coming to, or what they would look like. I mean, that branding is used to, it's real back in the 90s. It says, sororities are a proving ground. That's another takeaway here. They said, Rush is a social stratification ritual, bar none, says Southern Beauty, Race, Ritual, and Memory in the Modern South author Elizabeth Boyd, who said she visited UA to observe sorority rush parties, like she's doing some kind of nature documentary. Yeah, of course it is. It's a proving ground. It says sororities are ranked at Alabama. Well, that rings true from the old days. It says it's the hierarchy that really matters there. Okay, so the hierarchy of that ranking. Also says sororities have unusual rules dating back decades. So I've heard. This one was a takeaway for me when he put this in the story. I didn't know this was a thing, that there are such things as called Rush consultants. It says potential new members are entering a sometimes overwhelming process that can take its toll mentally as they navigate sorority recruitment. Documentary subjects Isabel Akrit and Michaela Miller visit Rush consultants before embarking on their respective journeys. So there's is this something, dads, have y'all been on for this? Moms, y'all been on for this for your young ladies, that you send them to a Rush consultant before? And how much does that cost? That's a takeaway I did not know. That one surprised me. Then it says you have to be pretty enough to get in. Uh-huh. That's right. That's it goes back to that ranking, doesn't it? I know that it shocks the sensibility of Ben Flanagan, but I mean, I think that's for, you know, I mean, you have D1 sororities and B2 sororities and maybe on down the list there. And then it also says, the machine is very real. Yeah, the machine was very real when I was a university student, and looks like it still is. That's a whole other story out there. But there you go. Ben Flanagan gives you some spoilers for the upcoming weekend if you're going to sit down and spend your holiday weekend watching a documentary about sororities at the University of Alabama. Roll Tide. Coming right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile.